Soda Nandana Raja Janda Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vana Chari Jamuna Tira Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Hare Krishna Hare Krishna
Krishna
Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Ganga Jamuna Tulasi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrindiki Jai Samavetta Bhakti Vrindiki Jai Go Premanandi All glories to the Sam of the Bodhis All glories to the Sam of the Bodhis All glories to the Sam of the Bodhis All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga All glories to Sri Prabhupada Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Vrishtaya Buddhale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschachadesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 10 chapter 85 Verse 27 Atatatra Kuru Shrestha Devaki Sarva Devata Srutvani Tamankuru Putram Atma Jabhyam Su Vismata Thank you. Atta, then Tatra, at that place, Kuru Shrestha, best of the Kurus, Devaki, Mother Devaki, Sarva, of everyone, Devata, supremely worshipable goddess, Shrutva, having heard, Nitam, brought back, Guru, of their spiritual master, Putram, the son, Atmajabhyam, by her two sons, Su, very much, Visnata, amazed. Translation: at that time, O best of the Kurus, the universally worshipped Devaki took the opportunity to address her two sons, Krishna and Balaram. Previously, she had heard with astonishment that they had brought their spiritual master's son back from death. Now, thinking of her own sons who had been murdered by Kamsa, she felt great sorrow, and thus with tear-filled eyes, she besieged Krishna and Balaram. Purport: Vasudeva's love for Krishna had been disturbed because of his awareness of Krishna's opulence, conflicting with seeing him as his son. In a different way, Devaki's love was somewhat distracted by her lamentation for her dead sons. So Krishna arranged to relieve her of the mistaken idea that anyone else but him was actually her son. Since Devaki is known to be worshipped by all great souls, her show of maternal affection must actually have been an effect of the Lord's yoga maya, who increases the pleasure of his pastimes. Thus in text 54, Devaki will be described as mohita mayaya Vishnu, bewildered by the internal energy of Lord Vishnu. Sri Devaki said, O Rama, Rama, immeasurable supreme soul, O Krishna, Lord of all masters of yoga, I know that you are the ultimate rulers of all universal creators, the primeval personalities of Godhead. Taking birth to me, you have now descended to this world in order to kill those kings whose good qualities have been destroyed by the present age, and who thus defy the authority of revealed scriptures and burden the earth. O soul of all that be, the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe are all carried out by a fraction of an expansion of an expansion of your expansion. Today, I have come to take shelter of you, the Supreme Lord. Purport: Srila Sridhar Swami explains this verse as follows. The Lord of Vaikuntha Narayana is but one expansion of Sri Krishna. Mahavishnu, the first creator, is Lord Narayana's expansion. The total material energy emanates from Mahavishnu's glands, and of that total material energy, the three modes of material nature are divided portions. Thus, it is Sri Krishna, acting through his expansions, who generates, sustains, and dissolves the universe. It is said that when your spiritual master ordered you to retrieve his long-dead son, you brought him back from the forefathers' abode as a token of remuneration for your guru's mercy. Please fulfill my desire in the same way. O supreme masters of all yoga masters, please bring back my sons who were killed by the king of Bhoja so that I may see them once again. The sage Sukadev said, thus, entreated by his mother, O Bharat, Balaram and Krishna employed their mystic yogamaya potency and entered the region of Sutala. When the king of the Daityas, Bali Maharaj, noticed the arrival of the two lords, his heart overflowed with joy since he knew them to be the supreme soul and worshipable deity of the entire universe, and especially of himself. He immediately stood up and then bowed down to offer respects along with his entire entourage. Bali took pleasure in offering them elevated seats. After they sat down, he washed the feet of the supreme personalities. Then he took the water which purifies the whole world, even up to Lord Brahma, and poured it upon himself and his followers. He worshipped them with all the riches at his disposal, priceless clothing, ornaments, fragrant sandalwood paste, betel nut, lamps, sumptuous food, and so on. Thus he offered them all his family's wealth and also his own self. Prabhupada Bali Maharaj's devotional attitude is renowned as the perfect example of complete self-surrender. When Lord Vishnu, in the guise of a young Brahmana student, approached him for charity, Bali offered all he possessed, and when he had nothing more to offer, he surrendered himself as the Supreme Lord's eternal servant. There are 9 standard procedures of devotional service, and the last, Atma Samarpanam, as taught by Bali Daityaraj, is a culmination toward which every endeavor should aim. If one tries to impress the Lord with wealth, power, intelligence, and so on, but fails to humbly understand oneself as his servant, one so-called devotion is only a presumptuous show. Taking hold of the Lord's lotus feet again and again, Bali, the conqueror of Indra's army, spoke from his heart, which is melting out of his intense love, O King, as tears of ecstasy filled his eyes and hairs on his limbs stood on end, he began to speak with faltering words. Srila Prabhupada describes the scene as follows. In Krishna, King Bali was feeling such transcendental pleasure that he repeatedly grasped the Lord's lotus feet and kept them on his chest. And sometimes he put them on the top of his head, and in this way he was feeling transcendental bliss. Tears of love and affection began to flow down from his eyes, and all his bodily hairs stood on end. King Bali said, obeisances to the unlimited Lord Ananta, the greatest of all beings, and obeisances to Lord Krishna, the creator of the universe, who appears as the impersonal absolute and the supersoul, in order to disseminate the principles of Sankhya and Yoga. Purport, Shri Vishnu Chakravarti identifies the supreme Ananta, named here as Lord Balaram, from whom expand the divine serpent Ananta Shesha. Impersonal Brahman is the source of the texts belonging to the Sankhya philosophers, while the personal representation of the Lord known as Paramatma disseminates the textbooks of Yoga. So here we begin another story. That is how Krishna and Balaram retrieve the sons of Devaki who were killed long ago by Kamsa. And as is explained in the purport, to be attached to her sons would ordinarily be a material attachment, because if someone has the Lord as their son, why would they worry about other sons at all? Nevertheless, she's here requesting, please, just as you revive the dead son of your guru, Sandipani Muni, so can you not also revive my sons who were previously killed by Kamsa? So it appears to be some sort of material attachment, which should not actually arise in a pure devotee of the Lord on this level. But we can explain this also in terms of the yoga maya of the Lord, that they act like ordinary people in some cases, just as Krishna previously acted as an ordinary person and began praising impersonal Brahman as superior to himself. So here, Devaki develops this urge to see her sons. One reason why this pastime will take place is to illustrate the power of Krishna, that he can revive anybody just as he revived the son of his guru, so he could revive anybody else as well, so he can revive all the sons of Devaki, if he so chooses to. And because Devaki requested it, and she's his mother and also a great devotee, and then Krishna will feel obliged to do so. So by doing so, of course, he illustrates his own power, also his willingness to submit to the desires of his devotees. Reviving people is material because bodies, we're talking about bodies, and the soul actually is never dead anyway. It's only a matter of where did that body go and where they are now. So for ordinary jivas, if they die, then they will get another body somewhere else in the universe. And they keep getting body after body according to the law of karma. So, therefore, we would expect these dead sons also to have material bodies and be somewhere within the universe with another body. In any case, they're not actually dead because the jiva never dies. It's just a matter of the body. However, generally, people who are attached to bodies and parents, they can't think of the soul at all. They're thinking of a material body. So why can't you bring back the body? The soul doesn't matter because the soul's eternal. Bring back the body with the soul in it. And they want the body, they want the soul, but they also want the body, and they want the body that was there before. They don't want a different body. That's there somewhere anywhere in the material world, but they want that old body. So that's normally impossible because then the body dies and whatever and rots away, and then a new body is supplied to the jiva. So not a very practical demand or request for most people to, once a person is gone for many years, then suddenly to say they should come back. Because that means you have to make the whole new body, the same old body again, which is impossible to do. Nothing is impossible for Krishna, so we see that he did bring back the son of his guru, and he recognized him as his son, as if it were the same body. He brought him back, and somehow he had the same body and everything, but he came back from hellish planet, or whatever. Nothing is impossible for the Supreme Lord to do. I mean, he has special arrangements, so he can do such things. So that is the surprising thing that Devaki saw. She was very astonished how the son of the guru could actually come back again. If a person is died and they come back to life in a few minutes or something, that's not a problem because the body's still there. But if the body's gone, well, how you have to? What do you do? Because the body's not there anymore; it's rotted away. So very, very astonishing. But as we see, Krishna can do the most astonishing things in his pastimes. So therefore, it's not difficult for Krishna to do this if he so pleases to do it. In the case of Sandipani Muni, he did it because he was obliged to pay his guru for his getting knowledge from him in the Gurukul. And it's customary that when you graduate, then you have to give something to the guru as a compensation for the teachings. So the guru asked for a son, therefore Krishna had to give him a son because that was his request. But it was nothing for Krishna. It was a very easy thing to do for him. His mother is making a request. Since Krishna already did this once for his guru, why can't he do the same thing for his mother? If she makes a request, he should be able to fulfill it. And we see, yes, he does so as well. We also understand that ultimately everyone should be attached to Krishna, including Devaki and others. So they should not worry so much about sons and whatever like that. But for pastimes, we see that sometimes the Lord makes such arrangements, and he shows his remarkable powers, and he also shows his willingness to fulfill the demands of his devotee, even if they look material at times. Here he fulfills that desire of his mother. In the ultimate issue, the attraction is for Krishna, and everyone cooperates with that mood of serving Krishna. However, if Krishna so desires that by making certain arrangements and using yoga maya, then the devotees also cooperate with that. That's just the Lord's desire, so they submit to the yoga maya of the Lord and they act in certain ways for the Lord's purposes. So we cannot criticize them as being independent or having material thoughts or material attachments, etc. In this case, nothing material is there. This is some arrangement of the Lord for certain pastimes. So Devaki, of course, like Vasudeva, addresses Krishna in terms of his powers. That's the main purport here, where she begins to praise Krishna. It's concerning powers. So not only Krishna, but Balarama as well. So she praises Krishna as the creator and maintainer of the universe, etc. And that you come to the world to destroy the unqualified people, etc. And that you operate the material world through expansions. So she addresses the Lord in this way, illustrating his powers in order to make a request. Because if he is so powerful, then he should be able to fulfill her request of bringing back her dead sons. Because he's the Supreme Lord and he can do anything and he's in charge of the law of karma, etc. So nothing is impossible for the Supreme Lord. So therefore, her addressing the Lord in terms of his power has a certain purpose in mind to encourage him to display that power so that she can have her particular desire fulfilled. In this way, again, the greatness of the Lord of Krishna is emphasized, in spite of the fact that Krishna previously wanted to deny that to Vasudeva, when Vasudeva praised him for his powers. Krishna more or less was more interested in the relationship of having Vasudeva as his father rather than his servant. In this way, Devaki also resorts to the Lord's powers. But in doing so, of course, then Krishna responds by submitting to this wish of his mother, not accusing her of being materially attached or anything, but he simply fulfills her desire. Devotee is brings the Lord under control. So then the Lord acts according to the devotee's desires. So if the devotee makes a request, then the Lord is eager to fulfill that. That means he is controlled by the devotee. So here, Devaki controls Krishna, and so he very willingly submits to that wish, and he goes down to Sutala Loka and then retrieves her sons. So though it is an address of addressing the Lord in terms of his powers, we see that the sweetness of the Lord is revealed by the fact that he is readily accepting the request of Devaki because he's under her control due to the affection that is established between them. So therefore we have a mixture of different sentiments here. On the one hand, the respect given by Vasudeva and Devaki, and on the other hand, the great affection that Krishna shows by trying to fulfill Devaki's desires.
Devaki actually, she is lamenting for her dead sons. And we see a similar situation. Arjuna, after hearing from Gita, from Krishna, when Abhimanyu dies, he rolls on the ground and cries. So this means that devotee or non-devotee, still they have the attachment. Well, at the time of difficulty, we forget.
We see even Krishna, he also cries when the demons cast his illusion and says, your father is dead. I killed your father. I chopped off his head. And then Krishna goes, gets bewildered and laments also. But then we also understand that all of this is not actually true. It's some sort of play that the Lord does. So as the Lord also goes through certain acts like this that look material, so his devotees also do. We should not be bewildered by any of this, understanding that ultimately it's all arrangement of the Supreme Lord for his pastimes. We know that the eternal associates of the Lord particularly are eternal associates because they're always thinking of the Lord. So if there's any discrepancies in the pastimes that makes them look material, that is not real, that is apparent only. And we can attribute that to the arrangement of the Supreme Lord for pastimes. So therefore we say the Yoga Maya potency acts. So Yoga Maya is a certain power in the Chit Shakti of the Lord. And just as we have material Maya, Mahamaya, which acts upon the Jiva, and then they forget who they are, they fall into ignorance, and they do activities under ignorance and create karma for themselves. In the spiritual world, we also have a type of ignorance that takes place. But it's different. The ignorance of the material world influences the fallen jivas because already they have a tendency to enjoy material nature. So the Lord gives that to them. The jivas in the spiritual world have no material tendencies at all. So they cannot really be affected by this mahamaya, that type of ignorance. In fact, the Lord guarantees they don't fall into the material world once they're situated there. So the sadhana siddhas cannot fall, the nitya siddhas cannot fall. And the Lord guarantees that, and he makes sure because he gives a portion of his chit shakti to each jiva. Okay? We know that in bhava stage, the hladini and samvit shaktis appear in the jiva, and he can realize the Lord. And so in prema, this becomes very fixed. So these jivas in the spiritual world are very different from the jivas in the material world because they got chit shakti there, hladini and samvit shaktis. The jivas in the material world don't have that. So they can never be affected by material ignorance because of this. The jivas in the material world, they don't have this shakti, samvit shakti, or hladini shakti. They have an abbas of that in the sense of trying to get enjoyment in the material world. So they got their senses and they can get some material enjoyment. That's their hladini in the material world. But it's quite different. It's not the chit shakti. It's just their capacity of a jiva interacting with material elements. And they have their samvit reflected in material knowledge, which is a type of ignorance, consciousness covered by ignorance. And then we perceive things and we think this is real. And that's quite different from the samvit shakti in which the jiva perceives Supreme Lord with no illusion at all. So that chit shakti is permanently with those associates in the spiritual world. So there's no question of falling under regular ignorance, material attachments, etc. They're endowed with those shaktis because, by the mercy of the Lord, because the Lord knows they are qualified. And how are they qualified? Because their only desire is for the Supreme Lord. So therefore, all this is given to them. So therefore, the only way this happens is by arrangements of another maya, that is the yoga maya, spiritual maya, which will take place for spiritual pastimes. So there must be some sort of maya in the spiritual world because everybody cannot know everything at all times. If they do, then there won't be any pastimes. They understand the result of the pastime already before it happens. So why we have to do anything? We sit here. So they have a sense of time and a sense of, well, what's going to happen in the future. And they get surprised. If they know everything, there's no surprise because they know everything already. Well, what's surprising? Krishna has all powers. We know what he's going to do. So there's no suspense in anything. So Krishna creates a sense of time and action and events taking place. And then we have different pastimes taking place. And there's this yoga maya is necessarily involved in creating these pastimes. The devotee only understands a little bit of what is happening, of what is necessary for that particular pastime. Everything else is blocked out. He doesn't know. So the yoga maya shakti acts all the time in the spiritual world. And at particular times, then it acts in a very extreme manner in which they may appear to be subject to, looks like, material maya, as in the case of Devaki being attached to her sons, or even Krishna lamenting or whatever. So obviously it cannot be real lamentation. Similarly, Arjuna laments in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. How can he have attachment to anybody because he's beyond the material bodies, so, and he understands everybody's spiritual soul? But then again, he's not thinking like that at all. So Krishna has said, you're not the body, you're the soul. But he must know that already if he's a Nityasiddha. But that he doesn't know that, so Krishna has to teach him. So therefore, it's the arrangement of the Lord that he falls under ignorance, and then the Lord teaches him, and then he says, oh, now I understand. Similarly, we see him in Parikshit. Why did he become afflicted by hunger and thirst and then get angry at the Brahmana? It was completely against his character to do such a thing, because he was very austere. He was a respectable king. He respected Brahmanas. He was in control of his senses. Yet he wasn't in control of his senses at that time, and he didn't respect the Brahmana. He did everything contrary to what a king would do. He's like a Kali Yuga king, but he's an example of a king fighting Kali Yuga. So how did he do that? Yeah. Yoga Maya of the Lord. So for certain pastimes, then this Yoga Maya acts, and it looks as if the devotee falls under ignorance, but actually we cannot attribute to ignorance, because we know their position is Nityasiddha. They're associated with the Supreme Lord, so they cannot fall into ignorance.
We see that so many people are dying and they're suffering of different types. But if his own near and dear one or one friend dies or has suffered, he gets affected. Is it because of the proximity or is attached? So many people are dying and he doesn't care. But his near and dear one dies or his friend dies.
The lamentation is because of attachment. There's so many people in the world, we're not attached to those persons. But we are attached to people close to us. We are attached to people for whom we have affection. We're attached to family members. So if they die, then we lament. This is a reflection of the spiritual, situation where we have meeting and separation. So in meeting there is joy, in separation there is lamentation in the spiritual world. So here in the material world, the separation is also there, but the big separation is death, which doesn't take place in the spiritual world at all. But here we have death, so that's a big separation, and that creates a big lamentation also. So, and everybody fears death and giving up material body, etc. So this is a reflection of the spiritual situation, but here the lamentation is because of ignorance and attachment to and identification with material bodies. That's why we get the lamentation here. There it's not due to that at all. It's this separation from the Lord. That's the separation.
But Yoga Maya, sometimes a sincere devotee, when he commits mistake, it may be all. But who is the authority to decide when the devotee has done mistake? Is it due to Yoga Maya or is it because of his own mistake?
Well, if they're Nityasiddhas, then there's no mistake at all. If we're doing sadhana, obviously we cannot say Yoga Maya every time we make a mistake. It's just material. We're still influenced by material energy, so we cannot say it's Yoga Maya at this time, because we're not in the pastimes of the Lord. So only in bhava and prema does that take place. So when you get to bhava and prema, then you can say, okay, it's some arrangement of the Lord. But before that, we can't use that type of argument.
I just
He's still not in Bhava?
Hmm?
In the present scenario, if somebody makes a mistake, he has not attained Bhava stage, he's still in a sadhana stage. Can we understand like that?
If he makes mistakes.
Mistake.
Well,
he's not attained.
Even in Bhava, a person may make a mistake. But then you cannot say it's a mistake. So Rupa Goswami says you should not criticize the Bhava Bhakta. What looks like a mistake for him is actually not a mistake. It's from our point of view, vision. But even if it is a mistake, because he does have a small impurity there, still we shouldn't criticize. Because he is so favored by the Lord and he is endowed with the Chit Shakti of the Lord that it's very rare. So we understand that whatever seeming fault is there, it will disappear as time goes on and he attains prema. So we never criticize the Bhava Bhakta.
This one who is at the level of Bhava, one should not be criticized and all that. We see within the Krishna conscious movement, there are a lot of sannyasis, advanced devotees. We don't know, they may be in a different level, and at that level, on a managerial point of view, sometimes there may be corrections, and sometimes how to handle that, Maharaj?
Well, in terms of sadhana, yes, we have to follow certain standards, and if we don't follow the standards, then we're more subject to anartas and problems, etc. So, as managers, the duty is to set certain standards. We have to set those standards for people. Of course, we're assuming they're not in prema, which is probably true because prema bhaktas are very rare. You're not going to find prema bhaktas in the brahmacharya ashram. So, you know, we're just assuming that everybody is a sadhaka at this stage, and therefore they are subject to training. Everybody is. We've nurtured by Krishna consciousness, saying you're not the body or the spirit, soul, and side, but when there is a pain in the body, immediately the mind thinks only the body. Kindly guide us in terms to what? Maintain oneself on the soul platform. Well, that's true because we're not on the highest level, we still identify with the material body. But the more one advances, then the less one is attached to that body. If one is on Bhava stage, for instance, there's a list of characteristics given, and there one is tolerance. That means they tolerate the whole material situation in terms of their body, whatever happens to it, and they don't lament for that because they're not attached to the body at all. They understand that the soul and that the servant of Krishna. Before that stage, we have less realization of that, so we have more attachments. But even if we're on Ruchi or Asakti stage, even at those stages, we're not going to be really interested in the material body and what's happening to it at all. We just leave everything up to Krishna. As we go lower and lower, we go to Nishta and then Anartha, Navritti, etc. We'll have more attachment. So therefore, when something happens to our body, then we'll be more concerned with that and get more disturbed by that. Yeah? So the lower we are, the more disturbance, the more we progress in Krishna consciousness, then the less disturbed we are. So gradually, we reach a higher and higher level according to our advancement. So then the whole solution to this problem is to become more advanced. Then we're less attached to the body. Then we won't lament for the body. So if we're fixed in Krishna, then to that extent, we can tolerate the situation of the material body.
Again, to pay back to a spiritual master materially, in the case of Sandipani Muni, to pay back to him materially, grossly, in terms of so many gross bodies, seems to be bewildering, Maharaj.
What is that?
To pay back to a spiritual master grossly, materially, as a dead body is bringing back, seems to be a very bewildering, Maharaj.
Well, for Krishna,
yeah, bringing
to bring back the body
was...
As I said, we would think maybe the guru shouldn't ask for that also. Why would he be attached to a son since he's the guru of Krishna and he should have... But it's all, again, yoga maya potency of the Lord doing all this. Ultimately, they're all eternal associates of the Lord, so they're not really attached to bodies at all. But they're put into the sort of illusion as part of the pastimes. Just like even all the Vrishnis, they think of themselves as the relatives of Krishna, but that's a material, in one sense, a material designation to think of yourself as a relative. We're the relatives of Krishna because ultimately Krishna's supreme Lord. He's not anybody's relative. So that's one way of viewing it. But then with Krishna particularly, then there's the idea that Vasudeva and Devaki also think of Krishna as their son. So are we considering that material or not? Is that a material identity? We're going to criticize them for thinking Krishna is their son? No, we don't. Because again, that type of relationship can be spiritual as well, that attachment as a mother or father or whatever can be spiritual. So in direct relationships, then we can think that like that. However, we see with Sundapani Muni and his son, that's not a direct attachment to Krishna, it's something else. Yeah? If Krishna were her son, fine. His son, fine. But it's not. It's his own son, and it's not Krishna at all. And then Devaki's children, again, that attachment. It's not a direct attachment to Krishna. So it looks a little bewildering. If it's a direct attachment to Krishna, fine, then we understand that. But if it's rasa. So here we have these other types of attraction coming out. Or we can say... even in the case of the cowherd boys, they're all attracted to Krishna, but they also have attraction to each other. And the gopis, they have attraction to Radha and Krishna. They also have attraction to each other. Are we going to criticize that? They got material attraction because this sucky likes that sucky, or this cowherd boy likes that cowherd boy. No, we don't criticize that. It's all somehow related to the pastimes of the Lord. And of course, we can say even the gopis, when they run out into the forest and their parents try to stop them, there's material attachment there. How can you have material attachment in Vrindavan? So this is all some sort of arrangement within the bigger attachment to Krishna. We find these other attachments there, which support the pastimes. Yeah? The mothers and fathers of the other cowherd boys are attracted to their children. And they care for them like mothers and fathers. We don't criticize that. Why they got material? Of course they're attracted. Everyone's attracted to Krishna. It's part of the pastimes. They also have attraction to their sons, and they act like mothers and fathers, etc. So again, Sundapani Muni acts as a father and for his son with some attraction and affection for him within the pastimes.
Again, relating to a couple of pastimes. One, in the case of when Shiva's son passes away, Shiva's is not at all disturbed. He wants Mahaprabhu's Kirtan to continue. On the contrary, Advaita Prabhu's son passes away, I think Advaita Prabhu laments. So there's a lamentation, the same, I mean, what one in the case of Advaita, not in terms of Shiva's. When Advaita Prabhu's son passes away, Advaita Prabhu laments.
Yeah.
Whereas Shiva's son passes away, he's wanting Mahaprabhu's Kirtan to continue and he's not lamenting at all.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So,
again, we can say maybe this is again arrangement of the Lord. Ultimately, Advaita Acharya is Vishnu, so why would he lament for anything? So it's only in a superficial type of thing again.
Maybe Deviki would have thought that why Krishna didn't save her sons. He saved Sandipani's son.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, that would be the material way of looking at it. But generally, because of Krishna, they don't think like that at all because of the great attraction to Krishna and the bliss they derive from that relationship. So they don't think of the other things. Nevertheless, as part of pastimes, then, they will think of like that. Why the sons had to die, you know, bring them back, whatever. So that's why this whole event comes up. It's like a material... They're let's say, following material type of sentiments in one sense, playing those roles. And therefore, she requests like this. So as far as a person in the material world, it'd be natural that she would ask them like that. Yeah? If she was a material person, so why can't they come back? And then she would ask. So she's put in that type of role of doing the same type of thing as a person in the material world would.
When Lord Krishna goes to other planets and returns, what happens to time? Why doesn't it lapse? When Krishna goes to other planets and returns, what happens to time?
Well, normally, if he's like he went to see Mahavishnu and came back, there was a lapse of time to some small degree, not very much. So there's of course, time itself is something that is for us is a material thing. We consider it a material. For Krishna, their spiritual time is quite different. when Krishna comes to the material world, then we tend to think in terms of material time, and we superimpose material time upon Krishna's pastimes, etc. And normally it looks like that because he's acting in the material world. But actually, he's still beyond time in any case. So he can adjust time in any way he likes within the material world. So therefore, it is said that Rasa-lila went on for whole night of Brahma, which fit within a few hours of the night of our time. So, you know, you can adjust anything in terms of spiritual life. Similarly, he can adjust space so that within Dwarka there were 16,108 palaces, and there were so many children and so many teachers and so many guards and so many soldiers there, all within one little Dwarka, which doesn't fit within the island of Dwarka, you know, in the ocean, but that yet it exists there. Or within the Rasa-lila there were 3 billion gopis in one little forest hiding. But that, you know, how does it fit in the whole of India, maybe 3 billion gopis? So you get time and space, you know, it can be are adjustable in Krishna's pastimes, and it can adjust within the material world. It looks like material time or whatever, but it's quite different actually.